Hi, everybody. Morning. Morning. Not too hot in here, huh? Okay, so this morning I'd like to talk about bodhisattvas. Some of you know a whole bunch about bodhisattvas. Some of you may not know anything. So I'm going to try to just do the middle way here or something like that. So bodhisattva. Bodhi means awake. Sattva means being. Bodhisattva is someone who intimately experiences interconnection. Intimately. With their whole heart. With their whole heart. And vows to work to help everybody wake up to the sense of camaraderie and interconnection. Everybody. All beings. That's the deal. That's the deal. And in Zen in America, one of the early bodhisattvas was a guy named Nyogen Senzaki, who came over to the U.S. and started doing dishes. he was actually a Zen master, but this was in the 50s, and he did dishes. He was a dishwasher, which is cool. So was my teacher, in a different way. And his quotation about bodhisattva life is, "Your gladness is my gladness. I have no other gladness than this." Your gladness is my gladness. I have no other gladness than this. That's Nyogen Senzaki. We wouldn't be here if he weren't for him. I'm just making that up, you know. But, you know, he was one of the early promoters, and he was actually a Rinzai guy because the early people were all Rinzai. So in the middle of suffering, the bodhisattva connects with joy in supporting others and supporting him or herself. But him or herself is an other too, you know. with joy, does that. So we have sesshins here every other month. Every other month we have a contemporary retreat, and every other month we have a sesshin. So in our sesshin we have meal chants, and we chant. We invoke three bodhisattvas, and I'm going to talk about those three today. Manjusri Bodhisattva, great wisdom. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, great compassion. Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, great activity. All honored ones, Bodhisattva Mahasattvas. Recognize that, anybody? We've been doing it here for years. And of course, nobody ever told us what it meant. So, invoking the Bodhisattva energy. And in Shin Buddhism, the bodhisattva energy is out there. It's what's called tariki, other power. So we bring the spirits in. We call the spirits in. These bodhisattvas of wisdom, Manjusri, the bodhisattva of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of activism in the world, Samantabhadra. We call them in. We invoke them. We call them in. Shin Buddhism. Katagiri Roshi was raised as a Shin Buddhist. I don't remember talking about how he happened to move from Shin to Zen. But he was raised in a Shin Buddhist family. And in Japan, Shin Buddhism is the most popular form of Buddhism. From the point of view of Shin Buddhism, we are slowly mixed up mortals are incapable of self-salvation. We can't get free. But by chanting the Bodhisattva's name, invoking the Bodhisattva power, we can empty ourselves out and give and welcome this huge being into our lives. Now that's Shin Buddhism. And Zen Buddhism is the opposite, supposedly, right? Jiriki, self-power. Be a light unto yourself. That's what Katagiri went from Shin to Zen when he was, I can't remember. We'd have to look it up. 18 or something. 18. And, of course, in Zen, it's self-power. We do Zazen, right? Those bodhisattvas aren't out there. They're in here. They're archetypal energy in here that we need to tap into. We have an opportunity to tap into through our Zen practice. And specifically through our Zazen. So, in the 13th century in Japan, we have two Buddhist luminaries coming forth. One, a guy named Shinran. He's the pioneer who starts Shin Buddhism. And another guy named Dogen, who starts Zen Buddhism, sort of Zen Buddhism. Both of these forms of practice were already present in China under different names. But this time of tumultuous warfare in Japan, where the society is totally unsettled, everybody's after each other, these two guys, the Shin teacher and the Zen teacher, developed their teaching. The similarities between them is that for both of them, they work with the bodhisattvas. And they both talk about how we get captured by the limitations of our minds. William Blake's mind-forged manacles. These are mind-forged manacles that we get imprisoned by, we get caught by. And they both talk about that. They both talk about the possibility of abandoning those manacles, seeing through those manacles, and no longer being caught by the self-other alienation, the self-other stress that dominates so much of our lives. And the Jiriki guy, Dogen, the self-power guy, just do Zazen. That's Dogen, just do Zazen. He has also some Tariki components because he has us chant this stuff without reminding us they're inside, as if they were outside. And also, he really honors the path of the Buddhist ancestors. They're from outside. You know, he talks a lot about his own teacher and his teacher's teacher and how moving they were for him, how important they were for him. So that's outside. And the power of the Sangha, the community, that's outside. Calling on you guys. You guys are the bodhisattvas to help me. Your wisdom will help me when I get all confused about my health. But I'm not confused about my health anymore. I'm knocking on wood. So that's Dogen. And Shinran, although he talked only about other power and giving yourself away to these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, he said you needed to do it in every facet of your life. And talk about self-cultivation. Talk about being a light unto yourself. I mean, that's not easy. In every moment, just giving yourself away to this Buddha, to this Bodhisattva. So, they're different but not different, right? So, today I'm going to talk about the three, Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, and Samantabhadra, that we chant in here. We used to chant them all the time. We used to chant them, I don't know, I guess once a week, twice a week, three times a week. Used to do a lot more chanting here. And in San Francisco, we chanted all the time. Anyway, I want to talk about them as archetypes for the rest of my talk, as archetypes. Drawing on Taigen Layton's Faces of Compassion book, which some of you know, and we've worked with before. It's been a few years since we've worked with it. So, bodhisattvas then are archetypal energies. And we do our Zazen to awaken those energies, to awaken those qualities in ourselves, where they are. And again, Manjushri is wisdom, Avalokiteshvara is compassion, and Samantabhadra is activity in the world. It includes activism. Not just needs to include activism. You have to be an activist. There's too much bad stuff happening. You have to if you want to help all beings. So I'll start off with Manjushri, and Manjushri must be up there. Yep, he's there. So there's Manjushri up there, and I'm not going to take the risk of taking him down. He's pretty heavy. I haven't picked him up in a while, but most of you can see him, right? So Manjushri. Manjushri means noble and gentle in Sanskrit. And he's noble and gentle because he's seen through the imagined self-other dichotomy, the imagined split and alienation between me and you and me and this and you and this and everything. He's seen through that, so he's gentle. He's noble. He's no longer estranged. And let's see, does he look gentle? No, I don't know. I don't know. You decide. And Manjushri is on the altar of all Zen meditation halls in the world, except probably Darnefields, where they have a rock. But you can say Manjushri is a rock. That's fine. He's a rock of wisdom. Sure, why not? And he's always resting on what? What's he always resting on? Usually resting on. What is that there? It's actually a lion. I know it looks like a tiger, but it's supposed to be a lion. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't know the difference or something, because he's beyond discrimination. So he's resting on a lion, and that demonstrates his courage to do. He's always in the Zazen hall, so he's showing us that if we're courageous just to sit on that lion that comes up in our sitting, just to be there with it, just to be open to it, not to run, not to hide, just to breathe into it, that we can have the same nobility and gentleness that he has. That's actually our nobility and gentleness if we do this practice, right? And then usually he's also doing what? This one he's not. This one, but in 9 out of 10 cases, what else is he up to? Yeah, 9 out of 10 cases he's got a sword. And that sword is to cut through all of our complaining, all of our pissing and moaning. On our cushions. He's here with us on our cushions to cut through. So every time our mind wanders off, we take the torch and bring the mind back. We cut it, the thought, and come back. We cut the thought and come back. So he's the bodhisattva of not knowing. He's the, of all the bodhisattvas, he's the one who knows the least because he's the best at cutting, and returning, which goes on for your whole life. It's not like you attain some level and you don't have to do it anymore. That would be cool. Yeah. I would like that, because I've been doing it for so many years. I would really be advanced. But it's not like that. It's a discipline, and you become a disciple of this practice. A disciple. You're not a disciple of some being out there, because this is not Shin Buddhism. You're a disciple of your own commitment to manifest the bodhisattva energy moment to moment. And also, he's always youthful. He's always a young guy. Is he young up there? Kind of young. He's supposed to even be younger. And he's a young guy because he's learned. So the other day, 3 or 4 days ago, and I was in my car, I was stuck at an intersection, there was a car in front of me, and on bumper sticker said, "Don't believe what you think." That's why he's young. That's why he's young. He's learned not to believe what he thinks. You'll stay young if you do that. Your body will get old and all wrinkled and yucky looking. But you won't. You'll stay very young, because of this. You're a disciple of the bodhisattva energy within you. Manjushri is also a male manifestation of Prajnaparamita. So Prajnaparamita is the mama of all Buddhas. And Manjushri is the teacher of all Buddhas. So he teaches all the Buddhas how to live wakefully, how to forget about being Buddhas and just live wakefully, just live openly. And in Japanese Zen, we have I shouldn't say we, because I'm not Japanese, but I practiced Japanese Zen for years and years. We have the words Kensho and Satori. Raise your hand if you know those terms. Only about half of you. Okay, well, those are terms for a flash of awakening. A flash, a momentary flash, it can last a second or it can last a long time. It's where you step out of time and you stop all knowing. Manjushri's sword keeps coming down, and then at some moment there's no knowing, and there's just openness. There's just the pulsating life that's always around us. That's all. Called Satori or Kensho, and in Rinzai Zen, it's a big deal. In Soto Zen, we talk so little about it that only a third of you even knew what I was talking about when you raised your hand, which is good, because then people get all excited and they want it. And they have more stuff to cut through. They have to get an extra sword. So, it's possible through this practice to no longer believe in our thinking. That doesn't mean we use our thinking. We use our thinking as a tool, but we no longer believe in it. It no longer hypnotizes us. It's really possible. It's possible. So that's the first Bodhisattva Manjushri, and like I say, he's the primal one in Zen. He's the primal one. Then the next one is Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara is compassion. Avalokiteshvara, known as Kuan Yin in Chinese Buddhism and Kanzion in Japanese Buddhism. If you go to a Zen ceremony, a Japanese Zen ceremony, where there's all a lot of Japanese, they'll go on and on about Kanzeon. You really think Kanzeon is a spirit, the way they do it. And maybe Kanzeon is. Who cares? But yeah, sure, Kanzeon's a spirit, here, there, everywhere. Anyway, they'll call in Shin Buddhism over and over again, Kanzeon, Kanzeon, Kanzeon. And most popular Bodhisattva. Compassion, most popular one in Mahayana Buddhism. And of course, Avalokiteshvara, oh, I'll pass out Avalokiteshvara to you. There's an Avalokiteshvara, you can pass it around. I just pulled it off the net an hour ago. There were lots of them, and I thought I'd pull that one off. Avalokiteshvara, is continually changing forms, as that one is. Avalokiteshvara can have 2 arms, or 10 arms, or 100 arms, or 1,000 arms, 1 head, or 10 heads, or 1,000 heads. Continually changing, using skillful means. Compassion has to use skillful means. Sometimes you need 2 of my arms, 2 of my hands. Sometimes you may need a whole bunch more. And so I accommodate myself to you, because already I have Manjushri manifesting. Already I've returned to the stillness of don't know. So then I can manifest Avalokiteshvara pretty easily. And Avalokiteshvara also changes gender. That's a masculine Avalokiteshvara, very masculine, but lots of the Avalokiteshvaras are very feminine. In fact, they're more. Kuan Yin is more often female. And then, of course, they're androgynous. And they're, you know, whatever. Because you have, this is, if you're going to help someone, you have to just shed all this extra stuff you carry around. Just be there with them. And that's what Avalokiteshvara energy is about. So Avalokiteshvara cares enough to listen completely to what's coming up, to what's manifest. If it's pain, yeah, listening to it, hearing it, seeing it. If it's fear, if it's great despair, just being with it, not judging, not trying to give advice. That's not Avalokiteshvara, that's some smart ass. Sadness, joy, confusion, serenity, just to be with it, just to bear witness without judging. And when I talk about Avalokiteshvara, I always differentiate compassion. Avalokiteshvara is compassion from two different other kinds of compassion. One is referred to in Tibetan Buddhism as idiot compassion, which is in 12-step terminology codependence. Codependency. Raise your hand if you know the term codependence. Oh, yeah. So you all know that. You all know that. Okay. So that's idiot compassion. You know, I was watching, I'm fictionalizing this to protect everybody, but I was watching my friend Jim with my friend Sharon, and geez, Sharon is needy, and Jim just is always taking care of her, always indulging her, always letting her off the hook, always excusing her when she doesn't honor her commitments. And I say to myself, idiot compassion. It's a good example. And it's an Avalokiteshvara, but that's because there's no Manjushri in there. There's no Manjushri in there. Second kind of compassion that's not real full-blown Avalokiteshvara compassion is compassion that includes anxiety or worry. You know, we start off often being compassionate about your need. And then we start to worry, is she okay? What can I do? Did I do it right? And then we even stay awake at night worrying. Well, then that compassion is not the big, open-hearted Avalokiteshvara. Our mind's gotten involved. The mind-forged manacles have sort of gone into that compassion and messed it up. So then we've got to come back to Manjushri. Manjushri is zero. Zero. So in Avalokiteshvara, your suffering is my suffering is yours. Pretty simple. And little by little through this practice, we enlarge our hearts and our capacity to attend to the needs of the world. Our hearts get bigger. They get bigger until they get huge. And they're already that huge. This is just drawing on that archetypal energy that's inside. It's always here. Our Buddha nature, we call it, right? That's what we call it. And, of course, Avalokiteshvara involves forgetting the self. You forget the self when you're really compassionate. And you get out of the way. You find yourself, you're not even trying to get out of the way. You're, because of your love, because of your care, because of the stillness of your mind, you just get out of the way. And you've all done that sometimes. You've all done that. It's not that... It becomes, for us, it's something exceptional, but it doesn't have to be exceptional. It can be actually just sort of a natural way of being. If you do this practice, boy, I'm really selling this practice, aren't I? I got to be careful. It could happen if you don't do this practice too. And it could happen if you do some other practice. But you have to do something. Self-transformation takes effort. Takes effort. You need to have a community and you need some kind of a guide. So in my last talk I gave, in the last few talks I've given, I've talked about the importance of acceptance. Acceptance is very important if we're going to manifest Avalokiteshvara's energy. Acceptance is very important. And I talked last time about three types of activity from the scriptures not the Christian scriptures, the Buddhist scriptures. Maybe I'm sure they're in the Christian scriptures too. Three types of activity that deepen and broaden our acceptance. And the first one is, well, of course, acceptance has to be without judgment, right? Of whatever is arising. That's what Avalokiteshvara does. Whatever is arising, he or she just accepts it. But there's the three components are, first, pacifying, which means seeing and opening fully to the negativity, to the difficulty without judging, pacifying. So the second one is enriching, allowing ourselves to be enriched by the shadows that we see coming up, by the negativity, by the worry, by the concern. Be enriched by it, connecting with it. And then the third one, magnetizing, being magnetized by that enrichment, which then can lead us into the third bodhisattva, who is Samantabhadra bodhisattva. So, in the case of Jim and Sharon, so I'm a little, I'm seeing Jim do this with Sharon a lot, right? And I realize that it's bugging me. So it's not. So there's his codependence. But then, what about me? I mean, why am I even mentioning it? Why is it even an issue? Oh, there's something going on, Tim. There is something going on, right? So I have to pacify myself. I have to see for myself, and the very seeing without judging, how I'm hooked into this. How I don't like that he's doing this. I don't want him to do this. I'm a little pissed that he's doing this or something, whatever, you know. Maybe I'm very pissed, you know, that I'm just as caught by the whole thing as he is, right? This is the human situation for all of us. Forget these fancy schmancy Roshis. There aren't any of them. Zero. Zero. Now, maybe the Dalai Lama, but I bet if you got to know the Dalai Lama, it wouldn't be any different. That's what I believe. You know, some people would disagree with me, so. You can disagree with me. So, if I just see what I'm doing with Jim in my mind, he doesn't know I'm doing this. You know, I'm being a good guy with him, right? He does. If I just see with that, see how my shadow's coming in, see what's going on, I can be enriched by that. I can feel more of a connection with him. Because he and I are different. And I can feel more of a connection with Sharon because she and I and he aren't different. We're not different. So by seeing and then opening up and allowing to be enriched by it, I can be magnetized by it. I can be drawn to befriend them and work with them, maybe be directing my communication, maybe do something else. But I can be magnetized. So in magnetization, we draw the negativity toward us with an actual invitation. We charm our shadow into relationship with us, and we get its power. But it's our power. It's already been there. It's the latent bodhisattva energy. It's always in here. And that's how we then move into the Samantabhadra realm. Now, the Samantabhadra realm, I'll talk about in a minute. But that's activism, right? That's activism. Or activity. And last time I talked about an incident in my life. I'll talk about it again today. And then I won't talk about it again for a year. You know, I only have had so many experiences in my life. So I've given... you know, how many talks over the last 10 years. So, anyway, this is the one where I was in India. So I was in India. And the suffering, I had not expected all that suffering in Mumbai and those places I was in. All those people with sores, all those emaciated people, all those beggars wanting support, throngs of them. And then my Indian host saying, "Don't give to them, Tim. Don't look at them, Tim. If you give, they may be charlatans. They may be on the take. You give to one of them, they're all..." So very confused I was. And what I said last time was, I just want to go in my hotel, not go out on the street. They had Indian TV in my hotel. I didn't care if it was Indian. I didn't need the language. I just needed some respite. They had the Indian TV on so loud everywhere in the hotel. That was fine. At least I had some... Oh, because I was overwhelmed. I didn't know what to do. I was totally confused. And then I went to see this Indian, to this ashram of this Indian saint, Amichi. Amichi, who's the hugging ma, in Sanskrit and in Hindi, ma means ma. So she's the hugging mother. And so she hugs. That's her thing. That's her teaching, is to hug people. So I was there at her ashram, and there she was hugging these same people that I had been so, well, not literally the same people, but people with sores would come up to her. People with, without arms would come up to her. Emaciated people. She just hugged them all. And she'd have attendants who would help her hug them. And she gets, what's that term that you get when you're working on a computer? Yeah, she gets carpal tunnel syndrome from doing all this hugging. So her attendants are always kind of working with her, you know, to have her hug differently. Because she'll hug up to like 1,000 people a day. That night, she was, I think, hugging 700-800 people. I mean, she really hugs them. You know, she doesn't just... So anyway, I just watched her doing that. I watched her hugging those literally not the same people, but they were the same. And I saw... I was pacified. I just opened fully to what was going on, and their pain and my pain and everybody's pain, and how embracing that and taking it in helps all beings. Just helps all beings. I mean, I don't know how, why, but it just does. And then I began to feel enriched by that. And then, as I said last time, when I got, I was so enriched by it that I stayed till the 2 a.m. I mean, I was hugging people at 2 a.m. She hugged me at like 10:30, but I stayed until 2 a.m. watching her hug people, just sitting in zazen, just being there with her, just watching, not judging, not thinking, just watching, and taking it into my heart, taking it in my being. And I was so enriched. Though I said last time, when I came back here, I knew that one of my friends was reached out to homeless people. My first week back, I said, I want to go out to a homeless camp. And then I've been doing this work with homeless people ever since, for almost 15 years. So I was magnetized by it. So Samantabhadra is the third bodhisattva. This is not my favorite picture of Samantabhadra, but it's one I pulled off the net. So Samantabhadra is the bodhisattva of great activity. Remember, great activity. And I believe that Manjushri comes first, Avalokiteshvara comes second, and Samantabhadra comes third. If you do them in another order, I think you're more likely to get really mixed up and really make a mess of things. But that's just my belief, so I don't, you know, what is a belief? Just a belief, we don't... But that is my belief, generally. There are some exceptions, generally. So having steadied myself through my Manjushri practice and opened my heart through my Avalokiteshvara practice, then I'm ready to be an activist. And there's lots of stuff to do. You have to find out for yourself what it is, what resonates for you. There's so much need. And each person has to find out for themselves what it is. And of course, you can do 1, 2, 3 just like that. You shouldn't have to wait 30 years to be an activist. I'm not saying that. But But activists who don't take care of settling down and letting go of their mind-forged manacles, they create a lot of problems. Especially if they don't open their hearts. Anyway, Samantabhadra is always riding on an elephant. An elephant. That's his animal. And Samantabhadra, and the elephant, of course, symbolizes calmness, deliberateness, and unyielding action. That's what we want when we're activists, isn't it? You want to be calm in the midst of people who aren't calm. Because if you're doing activist work in a jail with homeless people, in a nursery school, you want to stay calm, don't you? You want to stay calm. You want to be deliberate, because you can only make change if you're deliberate. Only make change if you're deliberate. And unyielding, but not unyielding in a rigid way, just in that you're doing this. You're going to reach out to these people. And it may not feel like it makes any difference in their lives, but if you keep doing it, it will make a difference. Everybody, it will. It doesn't matter if you're working with homeless people in jails, with veterans, with any group of people who are suffering. It'll make a difference if you stick with it. If you stick with it. Another thing about Samantabhadra. Did Samantabhadra get lost? Oh, okay. That's not my favorite Samantabhadra. Both of these are from China. See, that Samantabhadra has a lot of heads on him. I thought, well, that's interesting. what am I saying? Oh, yeah. So I'm saying the elephant. The elephant. Well, I'm also saying that Samantabhadra is difficult to see. In Avalokiteshvara, the images are always really clear. You can keep in your mind who Avalokiteshvara is, what she looks like. In Tibetan Buddhism, you might even visualize her. Same with Manjushri with his sword. But Samantabhadra is hard to see. Hard to see. Because when we act to help folks, we're not trying to be seen. We are not trying to be seen. If you try to help someone to be seen, you've got to go back and sit in your cushion instead. Please, just sit in your cushion instead. Come see me or something. This is not about trying to be seen. We create so many problems in the world by helping people and wanting to be seen for it. Don't we? So Samantabhadra is difficult to see. Because Samantabhadra, heart is so into it, that the recognition part is, it's wonderful when it comes. Wow, thank you. But it's not part of the process. It's something, some extra cupcake you get after you've had this great meal. Right? And Samantabhadra also is the holographic bodhisattva. Remember that term, anybody? Holographic. Within each pore of this bodhisattva contains the entire universe. Within each eyelash contains the eyelashes of all beings. All beings within each eyelash. A holographic bodhisattva. So by helping one person, by just being nice to one person, just doing something nice, penetrates everybody, because it's holographic, the whole. If it's sincere, if I'm not trying to get recognition, it helps. That's how we transform the world. We transform the world that way, you guys, through our practice. So just to summarize, Manjushri, we ground ourselves in not knowing through our zazen. Avalokiteshvara, we practice connecting and staying close to the suffering. Our suffering, our friend's suffering, our dog's suffering, our cat's suffering, our enemy's suffering. With acceptance, big acceptance. Opening fully to the negativity that's there. we have to open fully to it, or there won't be, we can't be an Avalokiteshvara form. And then finally, with that magnetization that takes place when we open fully, we can really help people. We can really help people. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So I'm going to finish with it by doing the chant again. Manjusri Bodhisattva, great wisdom. Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, great compassion. Samantabhadra, Bodhisattva, great activity. All honored ones, Bodhisattva, Mahasattvas. Mahasattva means great being. That's all. That's all. Okay, so that's what's on my mind today. Not exactly on my mind, but on my mind at this moment when I'm here with you guys. So, questions, comments, concerns?
Then what are you doing with the homeless?
We started out this is my my other part of my life. I direct a nonprofit agency that helps people with mental illness, and we began discovering we have a drop-in center for people with mental illness, and I went over there one day to the drop-in center, and I saw two lines of people. And I said to the director, Joan, I said, oh, are these people lined up for bingo? Are they lined up to get housing support? Are they lined up for jobs? She said, no, one of the lines is for the shower, and the other line is for the washing machine. I said, what? She said, oh, yeah, these people all live outside. All live outside. This is North Minneapolis. But still, they all live outside. So that's how we got started. And it wasn't too long after that I went to India, and then I really got started. We got started by ministering to them when they were outside. Just, I won't even say ministering. When you're trying to minister to someone, that's something extra. Don't try to minister to anybody. We just hung out with them. We just went and visited them. If they gave us stale coffee, we drank their stale coffee. If they gave me a cigarette, I wouldn't smoke it, but I would thank them and put it in my pocket for later. That's how we began. Every morning, just after dawn. And now we have a huge network of support for people who are homeless and have mental illness. We have safe havens where we bring them in. We place them in housing. But it's taken us 15 years. Many of those folks who live outside were very suspicious of us. They thought we were the man. Oh, I was the man. I am the man, kind of, you know. So we had to just no ministry. Just be an Avalokiteshvara with a don't know mind of Manjusri. Just be there. And little by little, they began to open up. As long as we weren't going to do anything to them. They felt we were going to do something to them. Put them in treatment. Take them to jail. Make them take pills. You know, the
priest.
So that's I could go on and on about that. But somebody else? Is that okay, Nancy? Did I answer? Yeah. Viv.
I'm a bit confused. Sometimes I feel I'm trying to help and actually doing harm. I had a good example last night. Someone in a wheelchair stopped me and said, I need help. And I said, well, what do you need? And he said, first of all, can you switch my wheelchair off? I'm semi-paralyzed. I can't use my hands. So I switched it off. And then he said, can you go into my bag and get a cigarette? I went in, I got his cigarette. He said, now can you get my lighter and light it? And so I lit his cigarette, and then he asked me for money. And it was, I kind of felt like I was being quite helpful. And he was very, oh, thank you so much. and yeah. I switched his wheelchair on for him again, and off he went. And it was only later, I thought, that really wasn't very helpful. You know, I gave him something that's really bad for him. I gave him money which he's certainly going to go and buy some more cigarettes with. But I sort of felt like, well, it's not my, you know, it's not my position to judge what people do. If that's the help he wanted, then, you know, it's up to me to provide. But on the other hand,
Well, well, it's a quandary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you don't, you never know from situation to situation. You have to feel the situation, look at the person, and just make a choice. You made a choice, and that was cool. Now that was cool. I mean, you did it. You did it with an open heart. Next time, you might not make that choice. But because of your thoughts about afterwards, and you need to think about, was that really helpful? Because the thinking mind's still important, right? Was that really helpful to him? My staff advised me years ago to, my staff at this agency advised me years ago to carry fruit around and offer fruit. But I'm so disorganized, I never have any fruit. So I've been thinking about that for 12 years. I still don't have any fruit. And sometimes I'll give a little money and sometimes I won't. And, you know, situation by situation. But there is a whole group of people like in India. I mean, my Indian relatives, by marriage, I mean, they were being accurate. They were being accurate. They were saying there are people out there who just live. They support their families who won't work off of begging. Well, it's true to a lesser degree here too. Alcoholism, drug dependence. So we don't know. But if we keep a still mind and an open heart and try to pay attention to the situation, we make the best decision we can. And the next time we make another one. And, you know, usually, yeah, so better to err, I think, on just open-heartedly doing something than not doing anything at all. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is. Well, how is that, Viv?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah. Lenny, did you have something?
Yeah. What does Avalokiteshvara say?
Oh, usually a lotus. Yeah. You know, out of the muddy water grows a lotus. So Avalokiteshvara hangs out in the muddy water. But because Avalokiteshvara's heart is so open, the lotus grows there and protects Avalokiteshvara. But the lotus has its roots in the filth, in the mud. So you know, it's all there together. And the beauty of the lotus depends on the quality of the mud. Is the mud really well composted? Does it really include all beings in it? If so, it'll be a wonderful lotus, and Avalokiteshvara will do wonderful things. Larry.
If you're trying to help someone, say, like, I know someone that's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And, hard to avoid slipping into codependency.
It is. I agree. It's hard.
It seems like I'm trying to help them, and then after a while, it's almost like I'm part of this
whole
problem.
And then when you notice it, you can step back, can't you? You can take a deep breath. You can ask yourself whether you're really helping, and you can maybe take on a new posture with him. Now, if that guy in the wheelchair came up to you again next week and you saw him raking in money, you'd probably take a different posture. Because we don't know if this guy is codependent or not. We don't know. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know if this guy is using you or not. And that's what we don't know.
Yeah, I thought probably afterwards he maybe was, because he was saying he was paralyzed, but actually, how is he going to take the cigarette?
Yeah, so Larry, it's a problem, but when we see it, we can be compassionate to ourselves. Oh, we got duped. We got duped. Not even that the person consciously tried to dupe us. They're so needy, they don't know. But now I want another strategy with that person, which is I'm going to set a boundary with her. I'm still going to be thoughtful and helpful, but I'm setting this boundary because I'm not helping her. And I have to figure out what boundary I should set, right? So the thinking mind's important in all this. Manjushri doesn't want us to not think anymore. And we're just...
It's difficult to do.
Which?
I mean, to set the boundary.
It is difficult. It is. It's difficult. It's difficult. And we continually watch, try to be empty, and reassess based on what we get back. Well, it's difficult. But even though it's difficult, look at the success of 12-step programs in the United States. Of course, also look at the recidivism rate. Look at the number of people who go back to drugs or alcohol. What is it, something like 80%? I don't know, something really high. So, but that's okay. That's we do our best. We do our best. Yeah.
Could you just say again what the bumper sticker said? I'm sorry, I forgot.
Oh, yeah. It said, don't believe what you think. Hi, Pamela.
When you said that we should begin to honor Buddha, Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, and Mahasattva, how should we do what we do?
Well, let's not get too hung up on this, but because we start then. But I'll talk a little bit about it. So we need some kind of a meditation practice. That's Manjushri. If you don't do a meditation practice here, do one out in your garden. And in the winter, you've got to do something else because you probably won't do it out in your garden in the winter unless you move to Florida. You can't do the others without, from my point of view, without a practice, a meditation practice. That's Manjushri. And that's because the mind-forged manacles get in the way of your being either an activist or a heartfelt Avalokiteshvara. They just get in the way. So you need to do the first one. But should you wait to do the second or third? Well, life is so short. I don't think you better wait. I think you better do it right now. But don't forget the first one. And the third one, the activism, if it just comes out of Manjushri but doesn't come out of your sincere open heart of Avalokiteshvara, it's kind of fake. It's like, I should do this because I'm a Zen priest. I'm like, give me a break. Or because I'm a... That's not it. You need to do Avalokiteshvara practice before you act. Open your heart. Pay attention. Listen to your heart. Go with the rhythm of your heart. But don't wait 30 years. Do it now. Do all three now. But they still do them in order. How is that? Oh, good. I got recognized. Anything else? Oh, it's 5-2. Stacy, one more.
Well, that order fits... Can be found in your physical body too.
Oh.
The clowning exercise.
Go ahead, tell us.
You're from your inside, your thinking mind, and it's very piercing, from the head, and so you move following just the head, or move following just the heart, in compassion, or move following just the hips and legs as your will, which is this Matravaga component.
Yeah.
And it's a clowning exercise, so if you move from any just one of those places, it's ridiculous.
Huh.
And so the idea, if you're going to be upright, is to have all of them in balance.
Good. Thank you. We should all practice being clowns, shouldn't we? Can you teach us? No.
You have to follow yourself.
Okay, well, I think that's time's up for today.